is up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 132, and this episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that helps us out and gives us a little kickback and, of course, helps the podcast keep on going every week. With me this week, we have a new guest who's never been on the podcast before. It is Ryan. And Ryan, I guess Ryan joined our team, right? When did you join, Ryan? I don't even remember.
Kind of like late August, early September, I think it was.
Yeah, late August, early September. He came to CES with us, and it's good to have you on the podcast for the first time.
Yeah, it's good to be on. You know, I think this is like my first podcast I've ever recorded, so we'll see how it goes. We'll just take things as they come and just go from there.
Yeah, so if anything is messed up on this podcast, we just blame Ryan for this.
Yeah,
one, so.
Yeah, no problem.
So let's jump right into all of the tech for this past week, and we'll start out with our reviews. And the first review is of the Fantex Evolve Shift X. And this case is one of the more interesting cases to come out this year. Fantex's whole idea with this was to be, I guess it has a couple uses, but I think one of the big use in which they showed us when they initially previewed the case was like a badass home theater PC case. But it's pretty big for a home theater PC case, but internally you still don't have a whole lot of room for a lot of components. But it's a beautiful case. I mean, this case.
Yeah, I think it's pretty awesome looking. I mean, yeah. It's a little taller. Every time I see it, I think that it's smaller than it actually is in person, right? It's a lot taller or wider, I guess, if you lay it down, than I always imagine it to be.
Yeah, I think the way to explain this is imagine a big sound bar, right, that you would sit below your TV. I think that's the whole idea with what they were going for with this is something that, you know, you can sit there, but, you know, it has the tempered glass side panel so you can see through it on both sides. Like, it's made to show off your built in side as well, but be a really sexy looking centerpiece sitting in your home theater PC. Or even if you didn't have it as your home theater PC, you could obviously have it set up, you know, just freestanding as well. And it's going to look pretty awesome. You know, Derek did this review, and the big issue with this case, and I think any kind of boutique style case, which this is that installation can be tricky. Because this is not a normal case, so you're limited to, one, what you can fit in there, and two, how things fit in there. It's very specific.
Yeah. I know Derek like has a ton of pictures, you know, in the review of the installation process, and it's a very detailed look at it, and I think it was good that he included all that information and pictures, because the build process in this is just detail oriented and is going to be time consuming, but I think like the end result is an awesome looking build for sure.
Yeah, I think when you're doing anything like this, like I've done, you know, small form factor builds, which look amazing when you're done, but when you're building it, it kind of is a pain in the ass. So I think, you know, you have your give and take with this, right? It's going to do either or, but it is cool. I mean, you can fit, for the most part, a full-size graphics card in there. You can do up to, I believe, a 240mm AIO or a custom water-cooled loop in there if you wanted to. Again, you have the tempered glass side panels. I mean, it's a nice-looking case. I wish I had this, like, you know, like a gaming PC sitting right in front of my TV if that was, you know, my plan.
Yeah.
With everything, I think it would look pretty awesome. You are limited to a mini ITX build as far as your motherboard goes, so that kind of limits you. So you're not going to do dual graphics in this or anything like that, which is a little disappointing. But yeah, overall good. And it's not extremely expensive for what it is, I would say. It's $164.99 right now.
I think that's a perfectly fair price for this case.
When it comes to small form factor, especially, you know, mini ITX, you're looking 60 to 80, maybe 100. But I think that the quality of the build and just how this is, I think that price is just fine.
Well, and you know, like Fantex, they're, you know, if you've ever worked with any of their cases in the past, right, like their build quality and just their attention to detail on just about everything kind of makes that price just that much more sustainable or, you know, valid, right? Mm-hmm. I think the only real issue Derek had was maybe with the power cord coming out of his power supply. You know, just there's a little bit of bending, you know, kind of you got to do with that power supply extension cable. But, you know, other than that, I think it's, yeah, well justified the price and for what you're getting.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree that the price is good. Just know that this is going to be a little bit more difficult installation compared to a normal ATX, you know, normal ATX case. But it's a beautiful case. I think that if you want to do something really cool with your living room, this is awesome. Even doing a pretty cool build yourself with this, even if it's not in your living room, it would be awesome too. Having this sitting on your desk where people can see it would just be awesome too. So definitely check out Derek's review. Like Ryan said, he goes into very good detail on installation. So if you are having installation problems with this, definitely check out Derek's review. It kind of walks you through that whole process. So check that out. And moving on to the next review, which is something that I've been wanting to take a look at for a while now since we were shown it at CES, is the Corsair Dark Core RGB SE wireless gaming mouse. It's an incredibly long name here. But it is their wireless gaming mouse. And when you think wireless, you don't think gaming. But technology has gotten better. And it has a very fast 1 millisecond, 2.4 gigahertz wireless connection. So you do get really fast performance there. So it's just talking about that in general. When I used it, we played a lot of Fortnite mostly. And yep. I really did not notice a difference if the mouse was wired or wireless. So that should attest to that. But you can also use it in Bluetooth if you want. It comes with a dongle for the 2.4 gigahertz wireless. But say you want to take this with you somewhere, you can use it as a Bluetooth mouse as well. But you're not going to get as great of performance. But the mouse is really great. It's super comfortable. I'm still using it right now. It has a good selection of buttons on it. It's not overly heavy, but it's not super light either. For me, it kind of is in that sweet spot as far as, you know, how heavy it is. It feels really good. It has a detachable thumb piece that you can switch out and have one that gives you a little bit more comfort or one that's like a normal mouse. And this is the SE version. So there's two different versions. There's just the Dark Core RGB, and then we have the SE. The SE version, the only difference with those is that the SE has the Qi charging built in, so it's wireless charging. And we complimented this review with Corsair's MM1000, and that's their mouse pad that has a built-in Qi charger. So it's a hard style mouse pad, definitely big enough for most play styles. And on the corner, or towards the top corner, you have a Qi charger. So that not only can charge this mouse, but you can charge other things as well. So if any of your cell phone or something like that has wireless charging, you can just put it on there and it's charging all day, which is obviously a good thing. And I really liked it because I've had like stands for my phone and they just like never work correctly, or just, you know, wires.
The cord sits weird. Yeah. You're like, yeah, they're never as good as the marketing pictures make them look.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So just being able to put this on my mouse pad, even with my phone on the mouse pad, I have more than enough room to use my mouse. And what's cool is that the mouse pad actually comes with a charging dongle that is a mini USB, and then it has adapters for lightning cable and USB-C. So if your phone or whatever device, if it's USB, lightning or USB-C, you can still use wireless charging with it with the included dongle, which is cool. But the only issue I have with the mouse pad is $79.99. To me, I mean, you can get a Qi charger for $15.
Yep.
And exactly. You can get a hard style mouse pad for $30.
A decent one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a nice mouse pad. It does give you an extra USB port, which is still plus, but I think that price is way off.
It's probably a little higher, yeah, than it needs to be. The one thing I do like about it, though, is having taken a look at their MM800, right? Their RGB mouse pad. I'm glad that they moved that kind of connection point to the upper left corner as opposed to in the center. That was my big complaint about it when I was taking a look at it, you know, of the cord getting in the way of that kind of bumped up section. But obviously with this, it's a wireless mouse, so it's not as big of a deal, but I think moving it to that corner is awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah, moving that to the corner. I mean, even if you were just looking at getting the mouse pad yourself, if you had a, if you have a phone that has wireless charging, this mouse pad is an awesome idea.
Drop it down there.
You know, and if you did have a wired mouse, yeah, moving that connection point to the top left is just awesome. The wire is not in the way at all. Really, really great. And like the mouse pad's awesome. I really like it. I just think it's overpriced for what's in it. I just feel that, you know, spending $80 on a mouse pad is, you know, it's just as much as the normal, as the non SE version of the mouse. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But going back to the mouse, I like it. I think it's going to remain as my main mouse. It just, it works so well. They kind of redesigned the thumb area with a kind of a sniper button. Of course, you can change that, but it's by default like a sniper button to slow down your DPI. But there's a back and forward button there. Like my hand just feels really comfortable on it. I've been using it for almost maybe a month now. I just love this mouse. And again, the mouse pad with the wireless charging basically you know, complements it almost perfectly. And you know, if you can just remember to move your mouse up into that corner at the end of the night, you don't have to worry about recharging, or you don't have to worry about, you know, your mouse losing power when you're in the middle of a game. That's kind of the big issue there.
How's that that textured, that bumpy texture for like your palm area?
I like it. It's not like I initially thought it kind of like rubbery and I wouldn't like it, but it's just this nice texture. It gives more, a better comfort feel. And it's the first time I think I've seen something like that on a mouse, and I really like it. It just feels really good. And yeah, it's different and something new. And I think one thing I like about this is not a rehash of a current mouse, right? Yep. This is a brand new design mouse from Corsair. So I really like that about it as well. Just completely different. So very cool.
Yeah. I mean, it looks pretty sweet.
Yeah. So this one is $89.99, and then the non SE without the wireless charging. So if you don't have the wireless charging, there's just a micro USB port in the front that you can, it comes with an included cable, and that cable will charge it as well as provide data. So you can charge, you know, say you run out and you forget to charge it, you can still use the mouse while it's charging too, which is cool. So
yeah, I think that's nice. You know, you've got that, the wireless versatility, you got the cable, and then you can also use it Bluetooth, right? As a travel mouse, just throw it in your bag or whatever. Like, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So it's a good, and there's just a switch on the back that you switch from 2.4 gigahertz to wireless. And then there's just an on and off switch on the back as well. So like I said, it's very well done. Great to see. And we'll have some more wireless products coming up from Corsair, because they released, I think like three or
couple
four.
Devices.
Yeah.
At CES, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have some more coming up in the upcoming weeks here. And that brings us to our final review of the week. And it is of a smart device. And the big thing that I've been trying to get into is really making my desk setup awesome. I think that so many people love to do that. I think that's where we spend, at least us, we spend a considerable amount of time. And towards the end of last year, we did our ultimate desk setup. And I've been kind of building upon that and adding different things to really make it cool. So this company called Wiz, they actually make a lamp. They're a company mainly in the UK, but they're coming into the US. They were actually at CES, so that was kind of their big show in the US. And they make smart home products. And their lamp is called the Colors Hero. And it's a really cool looking smart lamp. Basically, it has one of their RGB color or smart bulbs inside. And it allows you to obviously make the lamp any color that you want, but you can, it works with Google Home, Amazon Alexa, and a couple other ones too. A couple other smart devices, not Apple's HomeKit though. It does not work with that. But it works with two of the major ones, and it, so you can just voice activate it, turn it on and off. But on top of that, the app is really awesome. It's one of the best apps. I've reviewed a good amount of smart home products, and it's one of the better apps that I've seen, which allows you to not only control it from your phone, but control it remotely. You can turn the light on or off, even if you're not at home, of course. And besides just having static colors, you know, you can kind of have colors, you know, switch between different colors and give you kind of a mood. There's one that's sort of like a fire that kind of makes the light seem like it's kind of like a candle sort of thing.
Looking at the scenes here, you know, like in your screenshot, you've, you know, fireplace and party and just all those cool like color designs where, you know, you might want to set something custom every now and then, but then you might just want, hey, here's a preset that is going to look awesome. Somebody spent the time to make it look really cool, and that's really nice.
Yeah, so that's the one thing I really liked about it. There's a ton of these that you can kind of choose from, and it just makes it really cool, and it just really kind of sets the mood for whatever you're doing. And they do have ones that are like, I really enjoy, there's one called TV Time that kind of makes it like a blue, which is like really good for if you're watching something, you know what I mean? Because this is sitting right next to my monitor, so if I'm like watching a YouTube video or something, I put on TV Time, and I guess it's just better for your eyes. There's a lot of really cool ones, and if you're not even using this for your desk setup, there are ones that are called progressive, and there's wake up and bedtime. So wake up kind of turns the light on a little bit and gets brighter as it's a 30-minute period, so the light gets brighter and it changes colors as that timer goes on, so it kind of helps you get up. And the bedtime one is the same thing, it starts brighter and gets dimmer as the time goes on to help you kind of go to sleep too. So
it looks like it puts out a pretty good amount of light, you know, looking at your pictures, you know, you've got it kind of paired up with that lighting behind your screen, but it looks like it can light up the room pretty decently, or at least the area it's installed in.
Yeah, it does a really great job, and it's cool because it's just a bulb under there, but the design of the lamp diffuses that bulb perfectly. Exactly. So it looks like the actual kind of top of the lamp is the actual bulb. So I really like that. That's like super cool. But yeah, it's very bright. It definitely catches your attention when you walk in the room. The only issue I had with the app is the dynamic settings, right? The dynamic ones that will change color. You can't create your own. Which was a little disappointing. Yeah. You can set your own custom color, whatever, you know, color you want the lamp to be, you can do that. But the dynamic ones, you can't create your own dynamic setting, which was disappointing.
Kind of weird. You'd think that might be a feature, but I mean, it looks pretty fully functional and like fleshed out, right, for what they've covered. So I'm sure they've, you know, got just about everything you'd want anyways, but not being able to do some custom stuff for, you know, a certain holiday that's not in there or something like that. Yeah,
that's the only thing. I think obviously that's a software thing, right? So I think that could be added in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was incredibly easy to get it set, you know, connected to my network and set up, and even pairing it with Alexa was incredibly easy. Everything just worked. It was great experience. The one issue that I did have is that the power cable is directly connected to it. It's physically connected, and then there's like a little, like the power inverter that's on it, you know, is a little large, you know. Okay. And I tried to feed this through the opening that's in my desk, and it was just too large to do that, so that's kind of a downside when it comes to cable routing. But that's obviously my case, but if you are using this on a desk where you want to route it through, you might have an issue there. But it's a really great lamp. I really do like it. The pricing is, where is it? It's $86.67, which is an incredibly weird price on Amazon. I think it's a little high. You know what I mean?
Just for what it is. And from a company, I mean, I guess like they're new here. So coming in with a price that seems like a pretty premium price from a brand that we haven't really seen on, you know, in the US, might be a tough sell when you compare it to something like a Philips Hue or something. But, you know, I think if they have good luck with this, you know, it might work out for them. But maybe a little lower price, like you said, I think like $69.99 or something like that might be a little more attractive getting into the US market.
Yeah, I think so. And if you have to think about it, I mean, this is basically an RGB or a smart bulb inside of a lamp. Right. You know, you can pick up really great smart bulbs for like $35, not Philips Hue, but I mean the TP-Link ones, which I have, are amazing. And I don't know why anybody pays for Philips Hue, because they're incredibly overpriced for what they are.
Yeah, I was about to pick up like a 4-pack starter kit this weekend, actually, and the only reason I was willing to pay that price is because it came with the two of the Google Home Minis.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah.
All right, that might be worth it, but nah.
That's the thing. I mean, this kind of sits a little bit below that, but it's still kind of high for what it is. Like I said, yep. I think $69.99 for this. Solid price, you know what I mean? But it's really cool. I think that, again, we talk about adding something to our desk, and we talk about the RGB strips, which we've gone over a bunch, and I think adding a lamp like this is great too. So it's just definitely something really cool, definitely something to think about if you want to kind of jazz up your desk area. So definitely check that review out. And we move to Case Mod Friday, which of course is the section of the site where we cover a case build or mod that's been completed in the community. And this week we have a build called I Need Healing, which is a kind of tribute to Genji from Overwatch, which you and I have both played together. And
there's someone who plays Mercy quite a bit. I'm like, yeah, I need healing. I saw the name of this and I was like, oh, I gotta deal with that sound and phrase outside of the game.
It's a cool build. It's done inside of the Thermaltake View 27 Snow Edition, which is the white version, which is a pretty cool case that kind of allows you to see a good bit of the build. The build is sort of white and green with some neon in there, which I like. I think it looks really cool.
Yeah, I think this looks awesome.
Thermaltake water cooling, which I believe this is sponsored by them, so that makes sense. And it's cool to see the newer, this uses the newer circular designed Thermaltake block. I'm sorry. And I think that looks really cool. It's a little different than other blocks out there.
Yeah, you know, and they've got that Genji's sword there kind of running the length of the case down at the bottom right above the power supply.
Shroud.
That looks pretty sweet.
Yeah,
it gives a little more custom flair, right? Like looking at the build, it's got your sleeved power cables and, you know, your hard tubing and everything, but that extra flair down at the bottom that is really sets the custom piece apart, right? You're not going to find that you know, in a store somewhere that's custom built, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's very cool. And I'm not even sure if the case I never reviewed this case, but I don't even know if it comes with a power supply cover.
Oh, that's a good point.
If that one's custom built or not.
Because it's
not
kind of at an angle, right? It looks like it's got a little bit of an angle or curve, so that could be a fully custom piece, actually.
Yeah, so I'm not specifically sure on that. So that's really cool. And of course, the fans on the front, they match the colors as well. So I really like it. Of course, you have hard tubing in there. And then the custom cabling that matches the color as well. So it's a cool build. I need to get one of these cases in just to do a build in it, because I really like that curved
curved top. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, very, very cool. So definitely check that out. It's done by Praetex Design, which I believe he was in our top. One of his builds was in our top for 2017 and maybe even 2016. He does some really great work, really great plexi work when it comes to water cooling. So definitely check out this build. And of course we have our full section which has builds for at least past 3+ years.
You can spend forever in there looking through that gallery. It's awesome.
There's
some really great stuff in there.
Yeah, a ton of stuff in there. So definitely check that out. And that brings us to news this weekend. I really like the news this week because there's some very controversial stuff in there. And the first one we're going to talk about doesn't have a lot to do with us, the consumer, but it kind of does at the same time.
Yeah.
So recently, NVIDIA announced their new GeForce Partner Program. Basically, it's a program that graphics card manufacturers become a part of. So according to NVIDIA, this ensures that gamers have full transparency into the GPU platform and software they're being sold, and can confidently select products that carry the NVIDIA GeForce promise. basically it's kind of like a badge, you know, this is the GeForce partner, right? The thing that's interesting about this is that Kyle from Hard OCP, who's always done great investigative journalism when it comes to shady things that are going yep. on in the industry, kind of found out that, you know, if you want to be part of this program, your brand has to align with NVIDIA GeForce products. And that's kind of a broad thing, right? How does it align? Yep. But the what's not being said there is that basically you can't sell AMD graphics cards.
Yeah, under that under the same like gaming brand.
Oh yeah, under that. Yeah. And that's an issue because that becomes anti-competitive for one. And the big thing with this is that NVIDIA has these companies by the balls, right? Because NVIDIA is the one who's providing the GPUs that go in these graphics cards. And, yep. you know, the thought processor, what's being inferred by a lot of this is that, you know, NVIDIA would hold out allocation of GPUs, which are already being stretched quite thin. So, you know, if I'm not part of the program, I only get X amount of GPUs per life cycle or whatever. But if I do, then I get obviously a lot more and I'm looked upon higher in NVIDIA's eyes. You know what I mean?
You know, they're just going to kind of take care of them, right? In the sense of product availability and support and design help, you know, from, you know, moving away from just a standard board and all those things that go into making a custom board, right? That NVIDIA is going to provide to them if they're part of this GPP
program. Yeah. So, and then also, like you said, part of the GPP is high effort engineering engagement. So that's what Ryan just said about, you know, helping these, you know, AIB partners create custom boards and helping with that. On top of that, you get social media and PR support. So pushing out stuff to promote your graphics cards. And then the big one is the marketing development funds, which that's an unknown number of money
right.
that NVIDIA will give you to help promote the GeForce product that you're selling. And of course, that's a big deal. That the marketing development fund was a big part of Intel's Intel Inside program. So I'm sure you guys, if you've been in the tech scene long enough, you remember the whole Intel Inside commercials, all that kind of stuff. And when that whole thing came out, because that was Intel pushing AMD out, that led to a big antitrust thing against Intel.
Yeah, I'm most surprised when I see stories like this, and especially from these bigger corporations. It's like, did we not learn lessons or like think that someone's gonna like look into this a little bit, right? I don't know why they think they can get away with this, you know. I don't know.
Yes, so I think this I think the big thing with this is that it really makes it hard for the Atom board partners to really make, like, they're holding them by the balls because obviously the GeForce products are outselling the AMD products. The demand for the GeForce products is higher. You know, but if you're a manufacturer who's making both products, what do? You know what I mean? And if you don't decide to join this program, which you don't have to, and you can still have the products, right? But, you know, you're, again, the thought is that you're going to be limited on the allocation of GPUs and other stuff, and you're going to be looked down upon in NVIDIA's eyes. And yeah,
put you so far behind, you know, if your company X and company Y and Z have joined GPP and you haven't, right? Like, that just puts you so far behind, theoretically, and just competitively, right?
Yeah, and I think
not having that support from NVIDIA.
I think too, we're gonna see this next round, this next generation of NVIDIA products. You know, we might even see a stamp on the box that says NVIDIA GPP. You know what I mean? And then that will be looked upon by us consumers as that's the better product, right?
Yep.
You know, all this stuff can be an issue. And the thing is, too, is that, you know, I even saw after we posted this, and even Kyle said in his post that he thinks that because he brought this out to the light, to light of day, that they won't be sampled anymore by NVIDIA because he's bringing bad press to them. But as a journalist, you kind of,
You know, I read that same thing. You know, he's willing to make that, you know, sacrifice or to get the story out there and get the truth out, right? Even if that means, well, I'm never going to get an NVIDIA card or product again. So be it, right?
Yeah, and I think that that's why this story isn't all over the news right now. I didn't see a whole lot of people cover it, which is kind of disappointing. I mean, it's news. It's very important. I mean, I think that the biggest thing is that if there's no competition in this space, which, I mean, there kind of hasn't been, but there still is a little bit. But, you know, if there's no competition in the discrete GPU marketplace, that means that NVIDIA can milk a cycle. I mean, we've already seen it now. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, 10 series forever.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to milk a product cycle for three or four years now. Because there's no other competition. So that's the big thing that I see with this is that if they're doing even more to kill the competition and by anti-competitive means such as this, it just brings the competition in the marketplace down. I mean, I love the competition that we see in the CPU space with Ryzen, AMD versus Intel. It's been great and it's caused Intel to up the stakes and do what they should have been doing for years.
Been doing a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. So I think that, this is just, I really hope that, that some organization through our government looks into this program and finds it anti-competitive and that it gets kind of knocked out. But
I mean, you know, you made the comment of not a lot of people really covering it, but I think that kind of points to like Kyle's work that he did just to research this, right? Sounds like he had gotten a hold of a couple AIB vendors and none of them wanted to talk on record, right, for fear of trouble and things like that. So I mean, I think it's a huge deal, and that might be why, you know, other sites haven't really brought anything really, really new to the story, because I don't think they're going to get any more information than Kyle was able to get out of them, because for fear of getting in trouble by NVIDIA.
Yeah, it's like kind of like the big bully thing, right?
It's
interesting. Obviously, if we hear more on this, we'll let you know, and we'll let you know if, you know, companies that are part of it, if they're, you know, I'm sure Kyle will follow this up as well, because he sat on this story for at least a few days too, because NVIDIA never got back to him either. So I'm sure there'll be follow-ups on this. So we'll definitely keep you guys up to date on this. But I think this is one of the more interesting stories we've heard in our space in a long time. So, definitely.
A little drama.
Yeah, definitely check this one out. And we have all the links to Kyle's post and everything in our. So, definitely check that one out. And talking about NVIDIA, one of the big stories to come out this week is that NVIDIA is bracing for a cryptocurrency demand drop, which if you've been following prices, they've dropped considerably. The price of cryptocurrency, Bitcoin and other major cryptocurrencies have dropped, which obviously brings the demand for graphics cards down because, you know, even if you're doing a big crypto farm, there's a cost analysis which comes into play where if Bitcoin's only worth this much, you know, it might become unprofitable to be running the way that you're running. And NVIDIA is, they're bracing for this because they know it's coming. I think a lot of us kind of do, because cryptocurrency is kind of just not fading away, but the more that it gets regulated, the less people are going to be in it and the less profitable it's going to be, I think. And, it looks like NVIDIA is slowing down orders to TSMC, who obviously creates their GPUs. And, I think that makes sense. I think that, if you keep on going on what the current sales are and you can keep on pushing out these GPUs and then the demand and it drops, you're kind of screwed with a lot of unsold inventory.
Yeah, and you know, we've got the story coming up that kind of I think is already having an effect on these crypto prices as well. I think there's still just so much uncertainty in that market, right? It kind of makes me happy that I'm not in that in the crypto world at all. I've managed to somehow stay out of it, even though I keep an eye on it, not super close, but you know, it's probably a pretty tough process to figure out exactly, you know, the supply and demand for these GPUs, and I don't envy anybody at Nvidia or AMD that's sitting there trying to make decisions on chip orders and how many cards we're going to make and basing it all off of right now values of cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the world we're living in right now, which is kind of crazy. But the thing that comes out of the story is that this could possibly mean that prices for us gamers of cards will go down. Yep. Hopefully that's true.
I hope I'm ready for something new, I think, in my box. So
yeah,
that'll make it a little easier to stomach a purchase. And I'm not a big fan of buying used either. So I don't want these prices that we're seeing for all these cards to be the new normal, right? Because that's not going to make me happy or anybody else happy.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. So hopefully with this less demand, we'll see prices of graphics card come back to normal, hopefully. Yeah. But talking about that, and to help us gamers, is that NVIDIA, the first NVIDIA the P102-100 cryptocurrency mining card has come to light. And this one's from Inno3D. And it was released, or not released, so the pictures of it were released. And it's a cryptocurrency mining card powered by the NVIDIA GP102-100, which is the same GP102 that's used in the GeForce GTX 1080 Ti and Titan XP. And NVIDIA has made some modifications to lower the cost, but maintaining that same high hash rate. Basically, it has less memory channels in shader cores and as well as memory in general. So they kind of cut it down to make it more efficient when it comes to cryptocurrency mining. Not made for gaming, not made for anything else except for cryptocurrency mining. This is not the Turing mining card that we've been hearing about. This is not new architecture. It's still 10 series architecture. But what's nice about this is that it's made specifically for cryptocurrency miners. It's more efficient. I believe it's going to be more efficient than the Titan XP and the 1080 Ti at cryptocurrency mining. Yeah. And what's great about it is that it does not have any display connectors or anything like that.
You're not going to be able to do anything with it in a gaming stance anyways, right? This is strictly exactly. For crypto.
And you only need a X4 slot to run it, I believe, too. This one, for any of those interested in hash rates, the advertised hash rates in Ethereum are 47 mega hashes, I believe that's what they're called. ZEC, which I don't even know what ZEC is. It's 660 sols a second. And XMR, which is Monero, is 879 hashes a second.
That beats out, I think, the 1080 Ti and the Titan XP, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, this card should be cheaper than that too.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it looks like a standard GPU without those video outputs, and I'm surprised at how, I don't want to say flashy or fancy, the shroud is around the fans. But it's a little more stylish than I would think you would see on just something that's just going to go in a box and nobody cares what it looks like at all, right?
Yeah, I think they needed the
dual fans for sure.
Yeah. I think it's probably just based on one of their own designs. Yeah. And they just had it to use, you know what I mean? Because it is the Twin X2 cooling solution from Inno3D. So they kind of just probably their cheapest one they had to throw on there.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so that obviously, and the thing is that NVIDIA is allowing these cards with this specific GPU to be made to help gamers. So, you know, hopefully this also helps bringing the price down. Now, the only issue I see with this is that if I'm a miner, right?
Yep.
even though this might be cheaper and have a better hash rate, once I'm done mining, I have no resale value to
this. It's a dead card, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the issue. Because there's no display output, so I can't do anything with it besides use the GPU for crunchy numbers, right?
Right.
So that's the issue. Yeah. I don't know. There's nowhere yet on pricing, but it's I like it, but again, I don't know if this is going to stop miners from using gaming cards.
I doubt it, right? I don't think it's going to be enough, and it feels late, right?
It feels very late.
Yeah. I think I would have seen this card coming out early fall, honestly, right, of 2017. I think pulling those video outputs off of a card can't be too tough. And just making some tweaks here and there. Of course, they don't want to spend a ton of time fleshing out a product for, you know, Bitcoin to just fall off the face of the earth or some sort of regulation come in and kill all that R&D that they did. But I don't know. It just feels a little late.
Yeah, it definitely feels late. So it's a help, but I think, like you said, it's late. So talking about being late, NVIDIA's Turing card, which is the GPU, next GPU architecture, supposedly from NVIDIA, it looks like it won't start mass production until Q3 of 2018. So that's July, August time. And it looks like there might be an announcement of it or a preview of it at GTC, which is March 26th to 29th. So coming up here.
Coming up soon.
But it looks, like I said, this card won't have mass production till Q3, which means that it won't be on shelves till then, which means for the next series, at least that we think, the next, you know, the 11 series or whatever you want to call it, we won't see it till July or August, maybe even later.
I mean, when did the 10 series come out? I mean, it's like we said, you know, just sitting on.
It's like
refreshes that are take forever, it feels like now.
Yeah, 2 years at least.
Yeah.
So that's kind of disappointing. Yeah. You know, we've been looking for this new card that's all but done from all reports, right? They're kind of just sitting on it because they don't
stock up, right?
They don't stock. Yeah, they don't need to really put it out yet because the 10 series cards are well outperforming AMD's offering, you know. It's kind of just sad. You know, I would have thought we would have an announcement this, you know, Q1 with a release in Q2, but it doesn't look like that's happening. So,
yep.
Kind of sad.
Yeah.
So move over from GPUs to CPU, and a big story this week was that 13 major vulnerabilities were discovered in AMD's Zen architecture, much like what we saw from the Spectre and Meltdown, which affected Intel, AMD, and ARM, mostly Intel with those. But this one is from a pretty unknown company. Called CTS Labs, and they classified these exploits or the vulnerabilities into four different categories called Rise and Fall, Master Key, Fallout, and Chimera. And we have in our article the different classifications for those, and they're incredibly long. I'm not going to go into it. Now, this release was put out in the website amdflaws.com was put up, and there's been a lot of speculation about this. While it seems like these vulnerabilities are legit, from everything that I read, they are there. I think that one of the big issues was that AMD was notified, I believe, 24 hours before the release was put out.
24 or less than that.
Yeah. Which
is insane.
Which I believe when the Intel thing happened, they were notified months before.
Yes. Yeah. Months.
And which I think that
that's pretty standard, right? In the security world, right? Someone finds a vulnerability, it's pretty standard to 60, 90, 100 days out, giving that you know, manufacturer or software vendor, whoever it is, some of that lead time to at least be made aware if they aren't already, and, you know, work on that, things like that, to give them a little bit of a head start before going public with this.
And
giving them this little amount of time is pretty shady. When I first saw this come out, I was like, this doesn't seem right at all. And just from other things I've read, with how this went about, the CTS Labs, there's kind of some shady stuff they've been involved with, and some other companies they run with, I guess you could say. I don't know how much you want to go into that.
Yeah, I think that it's very, it's just like in the industry, that's like not something you do. That'd be like us having an issue with the product and us just putting the review out there without contacting the company, right?
Right.
Because, you know, if we ever have an issue with a product, specifically like a motherboard or graphics card that's just not performing the way it should, we contact the vendor and say, this is our issue. Can you help us? You know,
is it something in production went wrong, right? And something's, it's like physically broken, or, oh no, you need the latest BIOS, whatever it is.
Yeah, right? Something like that. You know, this was like, okay, less 24 hours or less, here it is. And then the next day it's out all over the web. It's one of the biggest stories this past week. And then, you know, you have all the counter stories about the CTS Labs, and they even use fake backgrounds on their video that they put out. That was kind of funny that I saw. You know, it's just a lot of stuff. And I think one of the Linus Tarvel, who's a big security expert, he said that this was one of the things with this was devaluing the AMD stock. That could have been one of the things too. So the website's amdflaws.com. You can check it out. They have information on all of the different all of the different things, and there's a bunch of information on there you can research. There hasn't been anything put out by AMD as far as a BIOS update or a microcode update or anything like that yet.
And I know there's some people, you know, that have dug into this a lot deeper, obviously, but it sounded like, and I haven't gotten too deep in it either, but a couple of these were kind of like, well, of course this is a vulnerability, because in order for you to exploit the system in this way, you had to have local admin privileges to the machine anyways, right? So at that point, changing some of these BIOS signatures and you know, things like that are almost a moot point, right? Because if you're already there and have physical access or just have local admin already, you've already got the keys to the castle, and you're already well on your way to exploiting that system and others. So just leads to the shady nature of this whole thing. Not to say that these shouldn't be known, right, to the public and everybody, and taken care of, whether it's firmware updates, patches, whatever the case may be, but doing it the right way obviously didn't happen this time around.
So I think that over the next week or so, we should see some more data come out on this, and obviously we'll keep you guys updated to what that will be, you know what I mean, and what comes out of it. And, you know, it could be discovered that some other company paid this company to put out these results, like, we don't know, you know what I mean. There's a lot of stories going on about all of this, but it, like I said, check out the website or check out our article. We go over the different classifications of the supposed flaws, and you can kind of read up about it. But again, AMD hasn't put out any BIOS update or fix or anything yet, so we'll kind of see where this whole thing goes. But rather interesting. But on a better note of AMD, they had their one-year Ryzen anniversary call, which went over basically the success of Ryzen, which has been a great success. It was one of the most anticipated CPU launches of our time, basically our time. Yeah. And two, that it gave us competition in the marketplace where there wasn't any.
I think if Ryzen would have been a failure, it could have been game over for AMD, honestly. Like, they had to hit it out of the park with Ryzen and the Zen architecture. And I, you know, it looks like they've done that.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. In this call, Jim Anderson, who's the SVP and GM of Computing and Graphics at AMD, says, "I don't see any reason why we can't get back to the historical share levels that AMD had enjoyed in the past." And if you remember, in the early 2000s, AMD had a market share of over 20% for desktop, and slightly below that for notebook. And that was when the ever popular Athlon 64 processor came out and was very competitive. And I think Athlon 64 might have been one of the first like custom builds that I did.
Yeah, I had an Athlon XP build, and then I know I had a Athlon 64, like 3200, I think it was.
One of my builds was an Athlon 64, or it might have been an Athlon XP, and then I don't know if anybody remembers. You remember DFI, company?
DFI LAN Party, man.
Yeah, I had the DFI LAN Party board, which was like awesome. At the time,
Art was horrible.
Yeah, the box art was horrible, but the board itself looked, I mean, nobody was doing the colors that they were doing on the board. Like, it was just awesome. And I had it in a clear acrylic case. Like, it looked sweet. But anyways, it would be nice. I think that if this year we're going to see, which is the next story that we're talking about, we're going to see the Ryzen refresh. And from all accounts, it looks like it's going to be a good refresh with added things in it and better performance over the previous generation. And I think that, you know, even the motherboard market when it comes to Ryzen is great. It's a great ecosystem of boards to choose from, which was one of the big things that I said when Ryzen comes out, is that we need competitive boards. We don't just need a competitive CPU if Asus, Gigabyte, MSI, all of them don't actually put out good boards, because that was the big issue with previous AMD. There was nothing good on the board, we have all that now. I think it's going to be a good year for AMD when it comes to Ryzen. If you want to look at this past year, AMD, the desktop CPU market share, is up 50% year over year, from 8% to 12%. That's Q4 2016 to Q4 2017. And in Q1 2018, 50% of the company's client compute revenue came from Ryzen. That's up 40% from Q4 2017. So they're doing a great job. And 60 new Ryzen-based platforms are expected to come out from OEMs. Mobile solutions, thin and light, all that kind of stuff is coming out.
You speak of those OEM platforms and systems, right? Like, that's something when going into Best Buy or something like that, where you had not seen really any much AMD systems, right, on the show floor, right? You're just walking down the line and they're all Intel. And just recently have I, last time I was in Best Buy, I looked across and saw, a Dell sporting a Ryzen CPU and a Vega GPU. And it was kind of like a fresh look on things from being dominated by Intel for so long.
Yeah. So I think that's awesome. And I think that, again, competition is great. And hopefully we'll see it in the GPU space, but we haven't heard a lot about anything AMD is doing in the GPU space. So we'll have to see. Talking about next generation Ryzen, benchmarks were leaked on the AMD Ryzen 2700X, which, at least for the initial launch, will be the flagship of Ryzen Refresh. And the leaked benchmark was Geekbench, which gives you a single core score as well as a multi-core score. And this beat out the Ryzen 7 1800X, which is the current flagship for original Ryzen. And it beat it out pretty well. This is obviously due to, you have a 100 megahertz boost in the base clock. So you're going from 3.6 to 3.7 gigahertz and a 350 megahertz higher boost, which is something you don't see. So with the Intel refreshes, it's 100 megahertz that you get on both base and boost. Yeah, with this, you're getting 100 megahertz on the base, but it will boost up 350 megahertz higher than the previous generation. So you're going from a 4.0 gigahertz boost all the way up to 4.35. That's pretty awesome.
That's nice. Yeah, that's yeah. That's awesome. I'm really excited to see what these parts can do, right? Like, call me a AMD fanboy, and you know, that's fine. I'm just excited.
Yeah.
Competition, like you said, is awesome.
Yeah, so, you know, for those who were expecting kind of a dumb, not a dumb refresh, but kind of a just blah refresh.
Yeah, it looks like another iteration kind of, yeah, I think.
It looks like we're getting something that's going to prove to be more powerful and prove to be proof for you to pick that part over the previous generation. So
yeah, I think that increased speeds, right? Obviously your 1800X or something is probably going to drop in price pretty quickly after this is out, but I think that performance that the 2700X gives is going to be pretty compelling to go with that platform.
Yeah for sure. So kind of excited for those to come out. We should see them very soon here, so very excited to see this year for Ryzen. Gonna be very, very fun year for that. And hopefully, our Intel punches back and we get better Intel parts as well. So
yeah, trade blows. And
yes, that's the best part about this industry. We used to have competition in a lot of stuff. Now we don't. But yeah. So moving from that to cases, the Corsair Obsidian 1000D was leaked on Amazon, and we've seen a couple different iterations of this case. One was shown not this past CES, but the CES before, that had some of the same components, but it was just like an unnamed project at the time. I don't even know if they said we could talk. I don't remember if they said we could talk about it or not. I'm not even sure. This is 2 years ago. But it's a really cool big case. And if you remember the last big case, one of the best cases was the 900D. And this is the next generation. This is their super tower big ass case. It looks a lot like the new Obsidian 500D, except for it's much bigger, much, much bigger. So you have those awesome tempered glass side panels that open from the front, which is just awesome. So on the hinge, you have a Corsair logo in the front on the glass panel in the front that is RGB. And even around the connections on the top, those are RGB as well.
That's what I like. I think that's awesome.
That's something new we haven't seen yet. And this is going to support everything. You're going to have support for extended ATX. So, you know, all that 8 expansion slots. So you can kind of put in multiple graphics cards. As far as water cooling goes, you can do 420 in the front, or 480 in the front, 420 in the top. As far as radiator supports, a lot of that. The front is actually big enough that you can do 8 120 millimeter fans in the front side by side. So
it's wide enough for that.
Yeah. So four rows of two fans each, 120 millimeter fans. On the back of the case sort of opens up like a book would, and inside there you have 6 2.5 inch drive trays, and then you have another 1 2 3 4 6 other trays that support 3.5 and 2.5 back there. This comes with a Commander Pro unit, which is their fan controller as well. It has a hefty price. It is $499.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And like you're talking about those doors that kind of open up on that side of the case. I like the look of the case. I think it looks pretty good, but it always makes me wonder why there's tempered glass on that backside, right? When it's just going to be closed up with those doors, you're not going to see the cable management or anything. But I think just keeping the symmetry on both sides is probably the reason, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm thinking that is as well.
And then there's a ton of empty space inside the case. Like if you look at that motherboard tray, right? I mean, it's going to support motherboards of all sizes, but above and in front of the motherboard drive trays, I know you can fit your radiators and everything. It just seems like,
I mean, if you're doing a thicker radiator, a higher end radiator with a push pull on each, I mean,
that's true. If you push pull, yeah,
Yeah, if you're doing that, this isn't a case to do a normal build in. You're not going to spend $500 to do a normal build in this. You're going to do one of the biggest motherboards out there, and the Aorus Gaming 9, which is a larger, it's ATX but still bigger. Any of the XL ATX boards you're going to put in here, you're going to do at least, I mean, you're going to do dual graphics cards, right? Yep. You're at least going to water cool this with at least, you know, you're at least going to do it. Anything over a 280 in the top in the front, you know what I mean. Tons of lighting. This is a case to build your ultimate mod in. You know what I mean. It has, and it's the ultimate case to do a badass workstation. I mean, you can fit 12 drives in this. Plus all the cooling that you want. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what people come up with on the builds for sure. That price point though, you said $500 is. It's getting up there.
Yeah, as for cases, especially when we've seen cases go down in price. I mean, you get tempered glass cases under $100 now. I like it. I think it's awesome. I can't wait to see the builds in it. No word yet when it's actually going to be available. Since this was leaked, the product page did go up on Corsair website, but I don't think it's available Amazon, for sale. Right? It was leaked on Amazon.
Or leaked then, to Amazon, okay.
Yeah, and then Corsair put it up.
I didn't realize they had put it up yet. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. But I don't believe it's available yet. I don't think. Let's see. Let me see if I can buy it. No, it's not available yet to buy. But soon, I would think. So, awesome case. And then finally, we had talked about cryptocurrency earlier. And one of the big stories this week when it comes to cryptocurrency is that Google is going to ban all cryptocurrency advertisements. We saw this on Facebook. The Facebook thing wasn't as big of a deal, but Google's a big deal for cryptocurrency. I mean, just for anything in general, if you're in a certain market and Google says, nope, no ads. Google is one of the biggest ad players in the world. I think they make most of their money off of their ad product anyways.
Yep.
And I think that in this cryptocurrency space, you see a lot of scams. You see a lot of shady businesses pop up around cryptocurrency, and I think they're trying to protect customers, but at the same time, I mean, how many times do you see those ads on websites for shady companies?
Shady things.
I mean, if I'm a legit ICO, which is initial coin offering, and I want to, you know, I that's my PR campaign, and I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm not. You know, or if I'm a manufacturer of a hardware wallet, and I want to put out ads about my hardware wallet that has nothing to do with even, you know, it has to do with cryptocurrency, but it doesn't have anything to do with I'm not a cryptocurrency. I'm not, you know what I mean? Yeah. I can't advertise my products. If I'm an exchange, a new exchange opening, I can't advertise my exchange on Google. It's just everything related to cryptocurrency will be blocked.
Do we know if this is just specifically cryptocurrency or if it's going to be more broad and deal with blockchain in general, right? I doubt that they would go that far since Bitcoin and all these alternate coins kind of operate on the blockchain.
I don't know if it's going to be blockchain, but I know that it's going to be anything related to cryptocurrency. To
cryptocurrencies, exactly.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, I think that's kind of, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this.
I think I'm okay with it. And the reason is, right, you've got these shady things. I think the crypto market and getting into it, someone new that sees an ad, there's so many, it's so complex and so new and so varied, depending on, you know, the type of coin and your wallet and just X, Y, and Z, right? That adding advertisements and people just going into it, clicking a link because, well, this banner looks like someone spent some money to make a nice logo. They've got to be legit, right? It's risky. So it'll probably turn out for the best.
I think that you see that anyways. I think you see that with products have nothing to do with cryptocurrency and they're still allowed. So I think that's the issue for me because I do think that cryptocurrency in my eyes is the future of banking, blockchain in general. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess it has the chance to be a slippery slope if they're going to start banning types of advertisements.
Yeah, because, you know, then what's next? You know, something that I don't know if there is pressure was put on Google to do this. I don't. It just seems it's you know, it's way too broad of a subject to block all related ads. It's not like, you know, pornography ads are blocked.
I know. How am I going to find all those lonely singles in my area if Google doesn't advertise them?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a subject that we can agree upon that shouldn't, you know what I mean? Show up. But cryptocurrency, there's a lot of things in the space that aren't shady, that aren't bad, that aren't, you know, just like I said, a cryptocurrency wallet. That's not a bad thing. That's a way to store your cryptocurrency. There's nothing illegal or bad about that product. And if I'm that company, it's harder for me to get word up about my product. I don't know. I feel weird about it, but it's a big deal. And since this story has come out, the prices of cryptocurrency has dropped. So it's obviously making an impact on the overall landscape of cryptocurrency. So I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But that is our news for the week. And we'll talk about what we have coming up this upcoming week. First, I'll be taking a look at a fully built custom, or not custom, because it's not custom. It is an iBuy power system. It is their Slate 9200. And the reason I wanted to take a look at this system is that I met with iBuy Power earlier this year. And the thing with these custom PC builders, and there's nothing wrong with them, is that you can go to their website and custom build anything that you want, right? You can pick any component. But for a new user or somebody who just wants a system quick, there are ones that are already pre-built on Amazon. And we wanted to take a look at one of those. I think that if you are looking, even if you're looking to build your own PC, you can't right now. It's just insane. I was just, as doing this review, I was looking up the prices to build this on PC Part Picker, and they're without a case, without a keyboard and mouse, what this comes with, I'm still $300 over the asking price of this system because of the influx of GPU prices. Exact same components. You know, because of that, and even RAM prices are incredibly high right now too, buying a system like this is not a bad idea. If you want a game, if you want a PC, this is the way to go. And it's not a bad case, or it's not a bad system at all. This one is powered by an 8700K GeForce GTX 1070, 16 gigabytes DDR4. And I go over the whole experience of getting the system, you know, and then we test it on a bunch of games. So, you know, this is a SKU that you can buy. This is not a custom build that we did. So if you're looking to get a new system, this could be a great system to consider. It's $1,500, which is pretty a normal price for building a PC.
It's so funny to hear, you know, I've heard that you kind of, that's the going thing is like, it makes sense now to buy a pre-built system. And you would have never heard that from anybody that's like an enthusiast like us, you know, just 6 months ago or 9 months ago, because we're like, no, you'll save money doing it yourself. You know, you gain the experience. And now it's like, well, you might just go ahead and buy a pre-build because you're going to save money.
I'm close to without a case and without, I mean, this comes with a keyboard and mouse. They're not anything to write home about, but you get that as well. Without a case and without the keyboard and mouse, I think it was close to $1,800 just in parts. That doesn't include the time that I have to build it and put everything together, and everything's built and ready to go for you. And there's also an RGB strip in there that I didn't put into the price either. So I don't know, you know, but anyways, stay tuned. Like, that review is going to come out, I believe, tomorrow, which will be Monday. So definitely check that out. It's something definitely to consider. And the system's great. It's built great. So stay tuned for that. And then I'll be taking a look at, I didn't get to it this week, but we'll have it for you this upcoming week, is the Sith Grand Kama. I always want to say Karma with this for some reason. The Grand Kama Cross 3. Yep. It's a very interesting CPU cooler, very big, very large, what Sith is kind of known for in some respects. And yeah, it's a different style of CPU cooler. So we'll see how this one does.
That's all I'm going to say. You had an image on social media, and that thing was huge.
Yeah, picture. It's big.
It was bigger than I thought. I mean, you said it was big. Like, no, this is, it's huge.
it's a very big cooler. It's definitely, you know, it's for those high, you know, bigger processors that put out a lot of heat. So definitely, and it's just, it looks super sweet. It's really cool. If you're into air coolers, this is a really cool looking one. So we'll have that. And then you are taking a look at Corsair's Carbide Series Spec Omega. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with Corsair's Carbide Series, lately they've had kind of these, angular looks to their front panel and top, and just kind of a, not necessarily a budget case, right? But more of a beginner's case. It's not their high end or anything like that. So the Spec Omega, you know, it's a tempered glass side panel. The cool thing about this, though, is there's actually a little tempered glass window that makes up a portion of the front panel. Gives you a cool look inside the case. There's a nice light strip that goes across it. Overall, pretty nice case. With an MSRP of right around $100. It's an available in a couple of color SKUs. We take a look at the black and white version. There's a black and red, and kind of black on black with a red highlight of lights. Comes with a couple fans. The build process was, you know, pretty standard, pretty easy. It's really what you'd expect from a case, you know, right around the $100 price point and from Corsair.
Nice. So good stuff coming out this upcoming week. So definitely stay tuned for all of that. And then, of course, this is where we get to the end of the podcast and we talk about if we did anything cool, saw anything cool, did any computer related things. You do anything cool this week?
Nothing too crazy. I know I got a chance to play some Fortnite with you. You know, we mentioned Fortnite a little earlier. Yes. Got in some group play of that, or some squad matches the other night. So that's probably the highlight of my, I guess, tech stuff for the week. Got a couple products here taking a look at. Got a case and a chair and just wrapping up a couple other pieces. So
I've been enjoying Fortnite maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah, you've been on there a lot. Bob's playing.
So I've been getting pretty good at Fortnite. I've been having a lot of fun with it. And besides that, I'm almost done with Ready Player One. I'm
And you said that last week on the podcast, I think.
Yeah, but then I got and I was playing Fortnite. And I didn't get you know. I'm almost done. I'm not going to say where I am because it gives up part of the story, I feel. But I think I'm close to 90% done. I think it's what it says in my Kindle. So yeah, it's gotten really good. I like it. When's the movie come out? It comes out soon, because I hear advertisements for it all the time. I want to finish it before I go see the movie, because that's one movie I'm probably going to see in the theater. So that's pretty much what I've been doing this week, guys. So we will wrap things up here. As I always say, we have our full list of show notes. So everything that we talked about, we have a link to, so you can go ahead and read through it, or, you know, looking at Case Mod Friday, you can see all the pictures of the case that we're talking about and all of that stuff. And if you're looking for us on, you know, your podcasting app, so you can subscribe, it is just Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.